All right.
Here we go. So exciting. Got a new intro. Welcome to The Geek in Review, the podcast focused on innovative and creative ideas in the legal industry. I'm Marlene Gebauer.
And I'm Greg Lambert. So welcome, everyone, to the first episode of 2020. Marlene, people may have noticed a slight change to our introduction phrase.
Exactly.
So with a new decade comes a new intro.
Well, I think it reflects a little bit better what we're doing. We have definitely evolved since the beginning of the podcast last year.
Yeah, and one of the reasons I thought it was time for a change was when I was talking with a partner at my firm who asked what the podcast was all about, and I replied that we talked about legal technology, and she literally stared back at me and mockingly yawned at me.
Ouch. Ouch.
So after that little exchange, I really got to thinking about the fact that we weren't really about legal tech on the show. I mean, we talked about it, but we were more about innovation and creativity within the legal operations field. So, you know, hey, we need a intro that reflects upon that.
Exactly.
And hopefully the next time I give my little elevator speech, I don't get met with a yawn.
Yes, I hope not. So I agree. I think this is much more reflective of what we are doing.
On this episode, we have Alyssa Valenti-Krosky, who is the Director of Information Technology and Director of Marketing at the New York Law Institute. And she joins us today to talk about her new compilation book, Law Librarianship in the Age of AI. She also gives us a little sneak peek on the escape room that she's doing for an upcoming library meeting as well.
Yes, yeah, that sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun.
Well, with that, let's jump into this week's Information, Inspirations. Marlene, mine this week, and I only have one with the new year, it's about the Rooney Rule in the NFL and the equivalent that we have in big law now called the Mansfield Rule.
Right.
And one of the things that I worry about is whether or not this is going to work in big law. And I bring that up because when the NFL instituted the Rooney Rule back in 2003, and this was to make NFL teams or required them to interview at least one black coach for every coaching position that they had open. And at the time in 2003, there were a total of three black coaches in the NFL, head coaches. And after the Rooney Rule was put in, that number went up to 8. So that's 8 out of 32 teams, which is a really good improvement.
Mm-hmm.
You know what that number is today, Marlene?
You're going to tell me, and it's not going to be a good thing.
It's not good. We're back to 3. We're back exactly where we started. Well, this really makes me worry that the legal field will do the same thing. That, you know, with the Mansfield Rule, is that we'll have a bump at the beginning, and then as time goes along, we go back into old habits. And I think that's what's happened with the NFL, is that they've gone back to old habits and saying, well, look, we're just hiring the top guy. But the issue is, you're not giving people opportunities. And I really worry that this sort of thing will happen here in big law as well. So this is one of those things where, quite frankly, what we need to do is monitor things constantly and call out firms when they aren't advancing minority entry into the legal field. This is where I kind of miss the old days when Above the Law was good at embarrassing the law firms who needed it.
Yeah, they would call them out.
Yeah, absolutely. So maybe we can get a resurgence of the Above the Law. Maybe bring back the comments. Well, speaking of which, I think you saw Ellie Mistal is leaving Above the Law. So I think he's turned into more of a television personality.
Yes.
So good luck, Ellie.
Well done and good luck.
Yeah, we'll miss you.
Greg, my inspiration is a Harvard Business Review article on what happens when your career becomes your whole identity. And the example they gave, apparently what happens is you're curled up on your bathroom floor unshaven in your pajamas crying into a towel while you're in a client meeting.
Sounds like a typical Friday night for me.
I know. But basically, the author goes into great detail about sort of how this happens. And generally it happens very slowly. You know, you start something and then you get very immersed in it. And suddenly you look up and your career is taking over most of your time. Most of your connections are involved through work and nothing else. The term that was used, it's psychologists use it, it's called enmeshment, where boundaries between people become blurred and individuals lose their identity. You know, and it prevents the development of a stable, independent sense of self. If your work is what's causing this, you know, you have to keep it regardless of what types of tolls it's taking on you. Mm. Some of the things that the author suggested in terms of evaluating whether this is in fact happening to you, some of the questions are, how much do you think about your job outside of the office? You know, is your mind frequently focused on work-related thoughts? You know, is it difficult to talk about anything other than work? You know, how would you describe yourself? How much of this is tied up with your job or your title or your company? What do you spend most of your time on? You know, has anyone complained you're at the office too much? Yeah, I'm sure that's never happened to anybody.
Yeah.
Do you have hobbies outside of work that do not directly involve your work-related skills and abilities? I thought that was an interesting one.
Can drinking be a hobby?
No, drinking cannot be a hobby. Dude, like we talk about wellness. We can't.
Oh, yeah.
That is not a hobby. And how would you feel if you could no longer continue in your profession? You know, how distressing would this be to you?
Yeah, and I imagine, especially in big law where you have a really good pay scale, that you get what I've heard referred to as the golden handcuffs.
Yep.
And so, you know, you're so tied to it, and especially since the rewards and achievements are based on the number of hours that you work, your salary, your bonuses, all of that it can consume your life.
It's the salary, it's the prestige that's involved.
True.
Because, you know, that's how the relationships are developing. And, you know, if you don't have that, suddenly, you know, you lose your entire network.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, you know, most people, their network is all they have.
Right. So anyway, I mean, if you take this survey and find that you're a little worried, you know, there's things that you can do to initiate change. And some of these things you can do on your own, and some of them you can do with the help of a therapist. So take a look at the article and see what you think. And that wraps up this week's Information Inspirations. We've talked on a number of episodes about artificial intelligence, and in fact, we're both speaking on a Legal Week panel on the AI hype in February. Our guest this week literally edited the book on AI in the legal information field, along with a number of great thought leaders in the industry. Alyssa Valenti-Krosky from the New York Law Institute joins us to talk about her new book, Law Libraries in the Age of AI.
We are excited that Alyssa Valenti-Krosky, Director of Information Technology and Director of Marketing at New York Law Institute, joins us today to talk about her new compilation book, Law Librarianship in the Age of AI. Alyssa, welcome to the Geek in Review.
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure to be here.
All right, before we get into your latest accomplishment, I did want to mention that this is not your first book. So you've written or edited a number of books over the past decade, including some very interesting topics such as makerspaces, which is a topic that we've covered here on the Geek in Review before, and a book on escape room activities for libraries. So that one piqued my interest. So what inspired you to write about escape room activities?
Well, I've been a lifelong gamer going back to the times of Legends of Zelda, Nintendo, yeah, and the old point-and-click adventure games like Zork Nemesis and King Quest. And then I discovered escape rooms and immersive gaming, and I was hooked. I played as many escape rooms as I could. I even flew to Europe to take part in a 4-day Harry Potter-inspired LARP, which took place in a 13th century Polish castle.
Everyone else, I mean, obviously we know what LARP means, but can you tell us what LARP means?
Sure. It's a live action role-playing game. Okay. So it's kind of like you're put into one of those old adventure style games. And everyone is cast
for real.
Ahead of time. So we all arrived at the castle and we knew what house we were going to be in. And we went from there.
What house were you in?
I was in House Labusa and we did fairly well. We didn't win the cup, but it was still a great time. There was about 150 of us. So it was pretty amazing. But immersive games like escape rooms and like LARPs, they're not only entertaining, but they're actually outstanding vehicles for developing critical thinking skills, providing information literacy instruction, doing staff training and team building, as well as for library advocacy and outreach. And that was my inspiration for that book and for creating my own escape room.
Interesting.
You're actually going to be discussing the escape room topic at an upcoming art conference in New York in March of this year. It's going to be on a topic of search for Alexander Hamilton and the missing librarian. So you're not giving away your shot on that one. Tell us a little bit about that and if Lin-Manuel Miranda is going to make an appearance, because I'm definitely showing up if he does.
Yes, actually, I'll be running the escape room throughout both days of the event so that conference goers can have a fun activity to take part in during the programming. And it's so interesting because I actually had no idea about the Hamilton play when I started developing the escape room.
Wait. How is that possible?
I know. And I was in New York. I came up with the idea. I was inspired by going to a Library Association conference in Michigan that was running escape rooms. And I came up with this idea. But my goal was to highlight some of our more remarkable collections at the New York Law Institute and to pretty much let people know that, as well as being a cutting edge library that offers a lot of electronic resources and digital initiatives, that we also have some pretty great historical collections as well. And we have quite a few items that were written by, owned, or signed by Alexander Hamilton, including his handwritten law register. He's also buried across the street from our library in Church Graveyard. So I thought it'd be neat to focus on him for my escape room. And it just happened to be a happy coincidence that it ended up being a very timely topic as the play got more and more popular.
So I want to give a quick plug for the New York Law Institute, because I am very familiar with the New York Law Institute. And actually, when I first started in my role as a librarian, it was extremely important in my research activities. And for those of our listeners who are not familiar with it, it is a jewel. And it has pretty much everything you want. You guys have a research service that provides things. You have quite an extensive collection, as you've mentioned, and you know, a lot of electronic sources that if firms are members, they can actually take advantage of. Tell us a little bit about the premise of the escape room that you're going to be conducting.
Sure. So the premise is that resident librarian, cat lover, and conspiracy theorist Addison Adley, she has vanished into thin air. She was last seen in the private library of Alexander Hamilton, conducting research surrounding her life's work and obsession, which was her theory that founding father Alexander Hamilton did not die on July 12, 1804, as a result of his duel with Aaron Burr, but instead was actually an intrepid time traveler who used the incident as an opportunity to disappear and travel through the ages. Not surprisingly, the authorities are not taking this seriously. Your job is to find clues as to her disappearance before the local police come in to clear the crime scene and disrupt everything. You have 30 minutes.
All right. So I got to say that if this escape room thing doesn't work out, that sounds like an outline for a novel as well. So think about that.
Thank you. So yes, I will be running the escape room on both days. And then also on the second day of the event, I'm coordinating a panel on law librarianship in the age of AI that will be moderated by Scott Bailey and will consist of some of the talented contributors to the book. And if anyone is planning to go, I have my own discount code that I was told that I could share with everyone. It's ESCAPE, all caps. So feel free to use it when you register and you'll get 20% off.
So listeners, escape, 20% off.
All caps.
All caps.
That does sound like fun. But let's move on to the new book, Law Librarianship in the Age of AI. It has a number of well-known law librarians and others in the legal information field contributing to the book. We've actually had a couple of the authors on the show. Cassandra Laskowski was one of our early guests, and Steve Lastris had a cameo last year as well. So how do you compile a group of thought leaders like this?
Yeah, it was such a pleasure to work with everyone who contributed. They are a truly talented group of authors and thought leaders in the field. I have learned so much more about AI from working with them. And that was actually the impetus for this book, because I had been seeing AI in the news and social media with regard to the legal field for quite some time. But what I was interested in exploring further was the impact that all of this has on law libraries and law librarians in particular. And that's what this book discusses. And everyone did a fantastic job.
Okay, let's start with the very simple question and also very loaded question of what is AI when it comes to the application in the legal field?
Well, simply put, artificial intelligence is a tool or technology that uses techniques such as machine learning and natural language processing in order to analyze sets of data, identify patterns within them, make inferences from that data, and in some cases, create new content. And Cassandra Laskowski does an excellent job of providing a much more detailed, in-depth definition of AI than I could give within her chapter, which is AI Defined. And so does Eric Adams in his highly entertaining chapter, What Machine Learning Can Tell Us About Shakespeare, which discusses exactly how machine learning and natural language processing works. But what that means for the legal world is a slew of highly customizable applications and technologies that will do wonders for enhancing our work, like legal research tools such as CARA on case text, which will let you use an entire document as a search string, or contract review tools such as Raven or Kira, which can search and analyze contract text, extract metadata, and can be used for due diligence. There are also a host of e-discovery tools available, tools for litigation analytics, tools for compliance review, as well as many tools that will assist with the business side of law, like Ruby Law, which is designed for legal marketers for business development. And as well, there are many tools for access to justice, which enhance public access to legal knowledge. And Heidi Heller and Chris Lout do an amazing job of explaining all the different types of AI tools that are out there, as well as the specific solutions that are on the market right now. Additionally, Chris Lout's chapter, which is AI Tools and Applications, as well as Valerie Craigle's Law Libraries Embracing AI chapter, both list the many law firms and law libraries that have currently adopted these AI tools.
Yeah, I have a confession to make. I'm using that chapter to help me, the chapter by Chris Lout, to help me prepare for a Legal Week presentation that both Marlene and I are on the number of tools that are out there in AI. So thanks, Chris. So for those who think that AI and other technological advancements are going to replace us, and I think you've seen a lot of articles out there that talk about this. So how do you calm those fears when you talk about AI?
Sure. Well, I think that's a concern whenever there's a new or disruptive technology that it's going to put us out of business. They said the same thing when Google became a search leader, that libraries and librarians would become obsolete, but we adapted and we endured, just as we will with AI. So I definitely think we have a few years before we're all out on the streets and searching for Sarah Connor. But seriously, I think that AI poses a lot of new opportunities for librarians, and as usual, we'll evolve and we'll take advantage of them. There are so many new roles that law librarians are perfectly positioned for, and I believe that they're just there for the taking.
So with that, and given kind of the expansive and disruptive nature of the technology, What do you see as the law librarian role in the adoption of AI concepts and processes? Because I am sure that many who touch this field have opinions about who should be doing what. So what's your thought?
Sure. Well, I see so many possibilities, and this topic is discussed by several contributors to the book, including Grace Boivin in her Opportunities for Law Librarians chapter, as well as Robert Ambrogi in his chapter on the future of AI in law libraries, where he says there's no better time than now to be a legal information professional. And I truly Woo-hoo. Believe that that's true. There are so many new roles and possibilities for law librarians with regard to this technology, including evaluating, selecting, and testing the AI tools for legal research and analytics, identifying bias in the output or the search algorithms of AI products. They can have new roles that involve training these systems and machines by selecting and curating the data sets, training attorneys to use the technology, as well as educating law school students in the use of AI, using AI to build internal knowledge bases, search engines, and research chatbots. And they're also in a great position to promote access to justice initiatives. So there are a lot of new roles that will be available.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I've always stressed about legal information professionals is it's not solely about the technology and what the technology can do, but rather how that technology adapts in the workflow to actually practice law. But, you know, when we talk about this type of technology, what is it that the librarian or information professional brings to the table that the IT programmer or other techies within the firm don't bring to the table?
Well, librarians have a deep understanding of how these products will fit into the organizational culture. They know the research needs of attorneys and their pain points in accessing information, as well as the business processes throughout the organization in which these products will be used. Also, I think that we have a unique perspective because as librarians, we have the research training and we know how to evaluate our sources. And what's more, we know the sources and the data sets necessary to feed and train the AI.
As with all changes in business structure, there tend to be winners and losers. What do you see as the most vulnerable part of the industry as AI processes are adopted more widely?
Well, just like with any new paradigm shift or huge change to an industry, the biggest vulnerability is stagnation. It's so important for librarians to keep learning and educating themselves about important topics like this so that they don't fall behind. They not only want to stay on top of these developments in order to take advantage of new opportunities and be in a position to make recommendations regarding AI technologies, which may enhance their firm's work product, but also because this may change the way the industry thinks about the billable hour as AI makes research and previously time-consuming and repetitive tasks much more efficient.
Yeah, that's why I was thinking that there's going to be winners and losers on this, and the more you're ahead of the curve, I think the more chances to be on the winning
side. That's always the case, right?
Yeah. So I mentioned before on the podcast that sometimes when we see something marketed as AI, it isn't.
What?
I know.
Really?
I'm a little Debbie Downer on this. In fact,
you're very realistic on this.
Yeah, and I've heard people say it this way, that AI stands at the corner of PR and BS. So do you see this as well? You know, what is it that law librarians need to do to help our leadership within our organizations not be duped by the marketing over the substance on these products?
Yes, this is a great point, and I think that we're seeing this already in an increasingly crowded market. AI tools are fantastic technologies that we now have at our disposal, but at the same time, the term AI is kind of becoming the new gluten-free. Everybody wants to stamp it on their marketing somewhere, even when it's not really true. And I think that Cassandra Laskowski does a great job of exploring this in her chapter in which she defines AI and she discusses the differences between rules-based systems, which are really more automation systems that rely on decision trees or macros, to get their results versus more of what we think of AI as AI, which are data-driven systems, which can learn. And this presents another perspective, new role for librarians, you know, evaluating these tools and making recommendations for the library and for their firms.
So, Alyssa, you've given us a little taste of what's in the book, but, you know, if we want the whole meal, can you tell us how to buy it? And the title is Law Librarianship in the Age of AI.
And is it a gluten-free?
Is it gluten-free?
Yeah.
Really?
It is gluten-free, and it is available at the ALA store as well as on Amazon.
All right, I'll make sure that we put a link up on the
gluten-free
show notes as well.
We are a gluten-free podcast this time.
And I'll also make sure that we put the escape code on
yes.
for the ARC meeting as well. So, Alyssa, thank you very much for joining us today. Alyssa Valenti-Krosky, Director of Information Technology and Director of Marketing at New York Law Institute. Thank you very much for joining us here today on The Geek in Reviews.
Thank you so much, Alyssa. This has been great.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
Well, that was a lot of fun. I'm kind of really wanting to go see this Hamilton escape room thing.
You know, people probably were listening and saying, you know, escape room, huh? But, you know, honestly, they're great, and you see them in a lot of professional development spaces for teamwork training. And
yeah, we did one with the AALL board, and Ron Wheeler, who's former president before me, and then me, we were on the same team, and we were terrible. The issue that we found is that it's okay to ask for help.
Yes. So. Yes. Well, I mean, this is the type of thing that you learn from these things that you know where people. You know, can improve and make adjustments.
Yeah. And I've been leafing through the book and scanning the book over the past couple of days that she edited, and it's really got some good insights. And again, like I said, I'm actually borrowing heavily mm-hmm. from it for our panel discussion.
When you're done with it, I'll borrow from
there
it too.
There we go. I will loan it to you today. All right. Well, thanks again to Alyssa for joining us.
Yeah. Great discussion. Before we go, we want to remind listeners to take the time to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Rate and review us as well. If you have comments about today's show or suggestions for a future show, you can reach us on Twitter at GayBauerM or at Glambert, or you can call the Geek and Review hotline at 713-487-7270. Or email us at geekandreviewpodcast@gmail.com. And as always, the music you hear is from Jerry David DeSica. Thanks, Jerry.
Yeah, thanks, Jerry. Well, Happy New Year, Marlene.
Happy New Year, Greg.
I will talk with you later.
Okay, bye-bye.